Well, hello everyone out there, and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk MedTech. Today I'm here with Carol Walton, Director of Manufacturing Market Intelligence at Wipfli, and we're here to talk about some trends in MedTech manufacturing. Kara, thanks for being on the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Omar. Excited to be here.
Anytime, anytime. You know, before we begin this conversation with the trends, I want to talk a little bit about Wipfli and some of the services that the company provides.
Yeah, so Wipfli is, we're at our core, we're an advisory and tax and accounting firm. So we are quite large. We do a lot of things in a lot of different industries. I personally, which makes sense as being a part of this podcast, I sit within our manufacturing, retail, and distribution industry. So it's what we call our MRD sub-vertical. Within that, we service a whole bunch of different groups, but a lot of it is focused on industrial manufacturing, food and beverage manufacturing. So some of what we'll talk about today is with some of those suppliers in the medtech space, but we service a lot of different companies within that arena, and we do a lot of different things. We do tax and advisory work, or tax and audit work, but then we also do a lot of different advisory services, ERP implementation, software selections. The biggest thing that I personally am akin to, which makes sense as we go forward in this podcast, is all the things associated with our manufacturing market intelligence. So I have the pleasure of overseeing that arena. So we spend a lot of time with our clients doing custom market studies. How do I get into a new industry? I'm in this market. How do I expand within it? Questions like that. And then we work with a lot of different manufacturing associations to do custom benchmarking, custom surveys, and all that jazz. So again, I would always encourage people, just if you're interested in what Wipfli does, reach out. We probably have someone who can help you in a certain area of your business.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, now that we've set the foundation for what Wipfli does, let's talk about some of these trends that you've been observing that we're seeing in manufacturing, right? I know one of the trends that we've seen here at MDDI is consolidation in the medtech market. Is this something you've seen as well? And if so, what's driving this consolidation trend?
Certainly. Yeah, we've definitely seen it in the medtech space. To be honest with you, we've seen it across all different kind of demand industries that industrial manufacturing will supply into, right? It's very common right now. We're seeing a lot of it happen in a lot of the sub-verticals that are supplying into metals. So a lot of your metal stampers, your spring manufacturers, things like that. We're also seeing it happen with plastics processors in the medtech space, as well as then some assembly plants. To your question about kind of why it's happening, I think there's two key reasons. I'm sure there's a whole bunch of reasons, right? But two primary ones that we can call attention to. One of them, I think, is what we can call just an aging ownership or an aging population, right? Manufacturing is nowhere near as attractive to go into today as it was to go into 30 or 40 years ago. That's much to my dismay. I personally love this industry. I wish more young people would get into it. But we are seeing an aging population that's generally running, leading these businesses. And there's not as many young people that are interested in taking them over. So one of the consolidation trends is purely because people are ready to retire, right? They've put in the work. They've run a manufacturing business that's supplying into medtech for many years, and they're done. They want to go sit on a beach or sit at a ski lodge or do whatever they want to do with their retirement, right? So I think on that piece of it, we're seeing a lot of consolidation because people want to get out, right? They want to go retire. That's a portion of it. But I think the other piece of it is we're also seeing a lot of consolidation because of strategic opportunities within vertical integration, right? So we know, and I think we'll talk about it a little bit in today's podcast. It comes up whenever we talk about the manufacturing industry right now. We know that it's a challenging market. We know that it's hard to make money in this industry sometimes. If I have the opportunity as a leader or as a business conglomerate where I can supply certain pieces and parts, I can do some of the assembly and some value add and do more areas within it, right? Maybe supply some of the automation, that's a portion of it. Maybe supply the hot runner systems that go into the mold, then go into the plastic part. Whatever that vertical integration is within your supply chain, that's going to give me more leverage, more opportunity to control more aspects of that supply chain and potentially be able to earn a little bit more, get a better margin on that work while still being cost and price competitive with expectations from those medtech OEMs of the products that they're sourcing. So again, I'm sure anybody listening to this can come up with countless other reasons why there's consolidation happening, but those are kind of the two primary reasons why we see consistent consolidation in the market.
Yeah, no, and it makes sense. It makes sense. And we're seeing suppliers now become a one-stop shop. And,
exactly.
You know, you and I have spoken before in the past, wink, wink, and this isn't our first time talking, you know, audience, we've talked before. But I remember initially we were talking about how you have companies that are becoming these one-stop shops, and you're kind of seeing that mid-tier OEM or that mid-tier supplier kind of disappearing because there's so much consolidation, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's becoming harder, right? I mean, I was just with a group earlier this week with presidents and CEOs, some of whom were suppliers into the medtech arena, right? And the topic of conversation there, my comment to them is, it's been the topic of conversation at every event that I've spoken at, every podcast I've done, every board meeting I've sat in for the last 5 years, is the higher cost of doing business and how it's becoming harder and harder to eke out a margin, right? That mid-tier, that middle of the road supplier that you're talking about, that's where the vast majority of the pricing pressure occurs, right? Because they're trickled down further on that supply chain to where they're getting more and more pressure. So it makes sense that that's where you'd see a lot of this consolidation as well.
Now, speaking of cost, this is a perfect segue to my next question. We're going to talk about the T word, right? And the T word.
I talk about it often.
Yes, tariffs. How are manufacturers reacting to tariffs? I know that the trend line has been all over the place due to recent rulings, due to whatever might be going on in the political atmosphere. But could you, let's back up just a little bit. Could you perhaps take a moment to explain where we are now with tariffs and what manufacturers should know moving forward?
Yeah, for sure. I will do my best. I could probably take a whole hour, a whole day, a whole week just to talk about where we are right now.
And that answer would change by next
certainly.
Week, right?
Certainly. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. My running joke with everyone is that I'm never bored in my job right now, thanks to tracking a lot of things with tariffs, right? There's never a boring day. Things always change. But current state, so as of right now, right, when we sit in early May, what we're dealing with at the moment is we are specifically focusing on three primary arenas that tariffs are being imposed under. Two are consistent. We've been used to them. They've been occurring for a while. Those are Section 301 tariffs. Those are tariffs on specific countries, predominantly on China right now. We also have Section 232 tariffs. Those are tariffs on specific goods. They can be implemented on any series of countries. Right now, the primary one that's being talked about in the manufacturing industry is the steel and aluminum and copper tariff, right? It's on a lot of those non-ferrous metals. There are a lot of other Section 232 tariffs in place. So there are some on timber and upholstered furniture, for example. There's auto part tariffs. There's a lot of other ones within Section 232. But the steel and aluminum ones are the largest topic of conversation at the moment, I think in part because of their impact on the manufacturing industry, but then also because there were some recent changes with that one just a few weeks ago. So I'll talk about that briefly, and then we can talk about kind of the elephant in the room, what I think you referred to, which was the Supreme Court ruling on IEEPA tariff. So we'll get to that one last. But briefly on the Section 232 steel and aluminum changes. On that side of things, what we're seeing now is, and I think tariffs in general are a little bit of bad news for the average manufacturer, right? And we could talk about that implication from a macro perspective. But the good news with the Section 232 steel and aluminum shifts that we saw a few weeks ago, they have now removed some of the complexity in terms of calculating what tariff you have to pay based off steel and aluminum content. So there's more clarity for the average importer who's importing something that has steel and aluminum content in it on how the tariff is calculated. For some, they now have a lower effective tariff rate. For others, they now have a higher effective tariff rate, right? So it's not all good news. But the one thing that I think was positive out of that is there's more specificity around how a tariff is calculated based off steel and aluminum content. So that's kind of the changes that have happened there. The other piece of it, so the other piece that I'll bring up on Section 232 and Section 301, those are current tariffs that are in place. But one of the things that we know because of this Supreme Court ruling on IEEPA tariffs is that the Trump administration is also very focused on additional Section 232 and additional Section 301 investigations that they are starting now, some of which have already started, to be able to impose additional tariffs the likelihood from a timing perspective is that that will happen around the July 4th holiday. Regardless of which side of the aisle you sit on, you've noticed at this point with President Trump's terms that he loves the symbolism of the July 4th holiday. He will likely be announcing additional tariffs at that point in time, both under Section 232 and under Section 301. So my final comment about that before I switch to the IEEPA piece real quick. Section 232 and Section 301 have both already been upheld by the International Court of Trade and or the U.S. Supreme Court. I bring that up because the biggest question I get when I have conversations like this is people saying, okay, but if he imposes additional tariffs, are those just going to be struck down as well? There is always a potential that someone will bring further legal action, right? I'm not here to give a lesson on the judicial system. I don't know the details of it. That's not what I do day to day. But what I do know is that generally speaking, both of those ways of imposing tariffs have been upheld. So they are legally allowed to continue imposing tariffs in those regards. So we expect those announcements in July to stick is the reason why I bring that up. That brings me to the IEEPA decision. So back in February, the Supreme Court made a decision that the Trump administration did not have legal authority to impose tariffs under IEEPA. What does that mean? That means that there are no longer IEEPA-specific tariffs, which were anywhere between, I think, like 10 and 40% that were imposed on many different countries. When President Trump, if anyone remembers, kind of the picture of him holding up a sign in the Rose Garden last year. Sure. He was holding up that sign with those different tariff rates, right? Those were IEEPA-specific tariffs. So those tariffs are no longer in place. They were no longer in place as of that decision on February 25th. Two additional pieces that came out of that, though. One, the following day at midnight, so there was 1 minute between the two, so technically really no real time between it, the Trump administration utilized a different section called Section 122 to impose a 10% tariff across the board on all different types of countries. It functions slightly differently than IEEPA. We don't need to get into all the specifics there, but the gist being, if you were previously paying an IEEPA tariff, you're now paying a Section 122 tariff. So really, your effective tariff rate from that perspective didn't change too terribly much on average. There's always specific exceptions, but in general. So that was one piece that came out of it. Those Section 122 tariffs will expire in the July timeframe. That's part of why these Section 232 and 301 additional announcements are coming, because the Trump administration wants to continue having tariffs in place. One other factor that I think is important to be aware of, and this is the biggest topic of conversation today, is that with that Supreme Court ruling, we now have refunds because people paid tariffs under IEEPA for a long period of time, and now they are subject to a refund. So I think the date was April 20th or April 24th that the Customs and Border Patrol opened a specific system. So there is an ACE portal that tariffs are paid within. Within that ACE portal, you have what's called a CAPE system, C-A-P-E. That's where people are applying for tariff refunds. My understanding is that there's a lot of different manufacturers who have applied for those refunds. To the best of my knowledge, no one has received that refund yet, right? We've heard quotes that it could take months, it could take years in some instances, but people are effectively applying for the refund. So that was kind of step one in the process. So that's a very long-winded answer to your question, Omar, but that's kind of the current state of tariffs. The final comment, two comments that I would make to anybody who's trying to navigate tariffs. One of them is, every single company's situation is specific right now. And that's the biggest challenge that manufacturers are having, right? You are required to, in some cases, become an expert in trade law or become an expert in HTS code classifications. And that's something that the average manufacturer has never had to deal with before. And that's why this is so challenging, right? Is because everything is different for each individual company. I will say, I think that there's potentially some opportunity to see some reshoring because of these tariffs, right? That's ultimately the Trump administration's goal. I personally, in my experience, have not seen too much of that yet because of the tariffs, but it is certainly starting to occur, right? So ideally, we'll see more of that and that will be a benefit. But regardless of the reshoring, you have a high level of complexity within your business now. My very brief selfish plug is that we are helping people with that. We have a tariff advisory service. So if anybody wants that, we're more than happy to try to assist. But the other piece that I would caution people about right now, if you are paying Section 122 tariffs, which is that tariff that replaced the IEEPA tariff, Section 122 tariffs have not been upheld by the International Court of Trade or the Supreme Court the same way that 232s and 301s have. There have already been lawsuits filed that the Trump administration does not have legality to impose tariffs under Section 122. I cannot predict the future. I would love if I could. But what I can tell you is that if I am the manufacturer, and I'm counseling many of my clients to do this right now, I would be tracking Section 122 tariffs paid very closely so that if, and again, this is an if, I don't know, but if the Supreme Court does make a decision in a year or down the road that the Trump administration did not have the legal authority to impose Section 122 tariffs, the same way they made the decision with IEEPA tariffs, I want those manufacturers to be prepared to start filing sooner without having to go back and do all that historical tracking of what tariff did I pay where and to whom. So I would just encourage them to start tracking ahead of time any Section 122 tariffs paid.
This is a very, very complex situation. And certainly, I think that a lot of, you know, I think a lot of manufacturers are trying to wrap their head around it. As I was listening to you and taking all of this in, a couple of times I was like, wow, I was thinking about follow-up questions. But then my follow-ups had follow-ups because in addition to, will this hold up? You've also got the issue of, can you get reimbursed for this? And how long will that take? And that could take years. That could take several administrations the time. And what kind of impact will that have on the economy? These are just kinds of things that I'm thinking about because this is a very complicated issue. And it doesn't seem like it's going to be straightforward and resolved anytime soon.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I don't think it will be. And to your point about it's going to take time with additional administrations, one other comment I would make, right? Again, I can't predict the future. Sure. I'd love if I could. I would be very good at gambling if I could. But what I will say is that Section 232 and Section 301, because those have both been upheld, I think it's important to note that the Biden administration, which had very different opinions than the Trump administration in terms of how to run this country, they kept Section 301 tariffs in place. So if we do have a change in office and a change from a Republican to a Democratic party after the Trump administration's term, there's a good chance, Omar, that both the Section 232 and the Section 301 tariffs that are imposed will remain in effect, right? I don't know that for certain, but I want to make sure that manufacturers don't sit back and say, oh, well, when Trump is out of office, all of these tariffs are going to go away. I don't think that's the case. Right. I think whether a Republican comes into office next or a Democrat will likely still have at least some of these 301 and 232 tariffs remain in effect for the foreseeable future.
Makes sense. Well, let's continue to talk about cost and things that are driving up cost. And let's talk about the I word now. We've talked about the T word tariffs, but let's talk about inflation. And we've seen prices increase for a variety of different reasons. You know, most recently, the situation in Iran. Is inflation still a thing? And what are you advising your clients on to kind of handle these increased costs?
Yeah, inflation is absolutely still a factor. And if you kind of look at what the Economic Development Corporations call a sticky inflation rate. So you take commodity pricing out of it, right? Oil prices, to your point, which is the single most volatile aspect right now. If you take those volatile prices out, if you still look at that sticky CPI, it's already sitting at like 2.98. So it's almost above this 3% target. And it's likely going to continue going up because of the challenges in Iran. And I think the piece that's a little bit smaller, but that people aren't talking about as much, is that, yes, it is absolutely the challenge in Iran. It's the closing of the strait, or the challenges of getting through the strait, I guess, is probably the better way to put it. But in addition to that, we also have the Emiratis and the UAE that pulled out of OPEC at almost the exact same time. So oil prices will continue to be a challenge that will drive up inflation across the board. I think part of why that's so important is because for the average manufacturer, you've got two factors at play. One is that you have to be conscious of the cost of doing business for yourself, right? Most of your fixed costs are going to continue rising at some level because of this. And we know that material price increases are somewhat successful in getting passed through to our customers, but inflationary price increases, not really an option, right? The average customer is not overly inclined to take those on at the moment. So the reason why I bring this up is because I think we have to continue as manufacturers being more creative in terms of how we can efficiently manufacture pieces and parts and looking really detailed at our entire costs, right? So both what are my costs as a percent of total sales? What are my discrete costs? What's creeping up? What do I have control over and what don't I have control over, right? Because there's some things like healthcare costs is a big example right now. Every manufacturer I know is complaining about increased healthcare costs. You might not have much control over that one, but what are the other areas that you do have control over? The other piece on the inflation side that I think is important to talk about briefly is it's impacting your cost of doing business. It's also impacting your employees' ability to make ends meet, right? If they're getting paid the same wage or have had a consistent wage increase, but it's only just keeping up with inflation, they don't feel like they're actually making more money in their household and how they're managing their own finances. So the other thing that I've talked to a lot of manufacturers about lately is what are creative ways that you can help your people save money? So some examples of that, right, is can your healthcare representative or can your financial planning representative come in and host working sessions with your employees, right? Could they sit in a conference room for a day and talk to your employees about how they can save a little bit of money on their deductibles, how they can better invest whatever they have invested or manage some of their debt structures? What are those resources that are not high cost to the business that may help your employees quite a bit? Even things as simple as right now, a gas card, right? If you want to help some of your employees get to and from work and have it be a little bit cheaper for them, can you throw some gas cards their way for a period of time, right? So I think the inflation game for the average manufacturer has to be acknowledged in two ways. How do I better manage my own costs as the business owner or leader? But then also, how do I better help my employees manage the financial cost burden as much as I can for them as well? And then those are the two areas to spend time on.
Awesome. Now, I want to talk about another trend that we've been seeing, and that is there's less reliance on manufacturing in China now, and we're seeing more areas like Vietnam or Costa Rica become manufacturing hubs for companies in the U.S. Are you seeing this trend as well? Am I a little bit off base, or is this happening? And why?
No, you're definitely not off base. We're absolutely seeing this happen. So I can quote kind of two pieces of data first and then talk about more of the anecdotal pieces of it. We are absolutely seeing increases in demand in Vietnam and India, and Costa Rica is another example. But if I quote the two highest, so if I look at export trends over the last 10 years, Vietnam has seen the single largest increase in exports. It's greater than 100%. I think it's like 180%, if I remember it correctly. India is second at 99%. So again, you can do the math different ways, but they're number one and two in terms of increases in export growth over the last 10 years. Vietnam is a country to watch right now. There's absolutely a huge amount of demand that's coming out of Vietnam, India as well, and then many different areas of Central and South America, like Costa Rica, like Uruguay in some cases and others, because what we're seeing is we love Asia, India, so from more of the Southeast Asian perspective, and then Vietnam, Malaysia, other countries, we like them a lot because they have similar cost structures to China, right, and some similar capabilities to China. But we also like Central and South America a lot because in many cases, there's far cheaper freight cost, right? And in some cases, there's also cheaper land cost. So that's why we're kind of seeing increased demand in both of those areas. The caution that I would make there, right? I think you're completely on base in terms of seeing that happen. I do think it will continue occurring. But if I relate us back to tariffs for just one second, because I can't leave a conversation without talking about tariffs repeatedly right now. Both Vietnam and Costa Rica and India, right? All of these countries that we're seeing massive increases in export growth will likely, again, I don't know for certain, but will likely be targets of the Trump administration for additional tariffs, right? So I think one area to just caution manufacturers is to scenario plan. Okay, if I've pivoted a lot of my sourcing from China to Vietnam, for example, what happens if an additional 15% tariff gets imposed on Vietnam? Right. We know for a fact that many of those countries that are very high in terms of their export growth are also countries that are being targeted in the Section 301 investigations. Now, we don't know whether or not a tariff will be imposed on them, but we know that they are part of that investigation. Right. So I agree with you completely. They're relying less on China. They're finding other sources. But as we have that conversation, right, I'd be remiss not to at least caution manufacturers to be aware of those countries that are part of that Section 301 investigation so that we're preparing ourselves for any changes that may come in July.
Awesome. Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, I'm doing all, I'm working on all of these articles, all of this content regarding Costa Rica and Vietnam. And, you know, China used to be, quote unquote, when I first started my career in medtech, it used to be the promised land, right? Mm-hmm. And that was back in 2007. But now the attention is focused more so on Costa Rica. That's the sexier news title, right? That's the sexier place that everyone's talking about, or the more interesting place that everyone's talking about. But Vietnam also has, there's also a strong foothold for manufacturing in Vietnam as well. So thank you for clarifying all of that.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. Yeah. I want to talk about AI, and I can't get past the conversation without talking about artificial intelligence. You know, it's tariffs for you, it's artificial intelligence for me.
Yep.
How are we seeing manufacturers embrace artificial intelligence? And I know that's a broad question. I know we can go a thousand different places, but just how are we seeing manufacturers embrace it? Are they skittish to it? Are they accepting it? What are you seeing?
For sure. The good news is this is less of my area of expertise. We have digital strategists within Whipley that this is their full-time job. So like I can talk about tariffs for hours. They can talk about AI for hours. But I do spend a lot of time in manufacturers and I work with some of our digital strategists. So I'll kind of tell you what I'm hearing from them. I think manufacturers are excited about AI. I think they're trying to learn more about it, but they're looking for very tactical, very specific ways for it to help them. For example, how do I use AI to improve my AP process? How do I use AI to better understand which machines are running when? How do I implement certain AI modules or certain AI bots to help me understand and pull better reporting out of my ERP system, right? So I think for manufacturers, it's less of this interesting big topic of, oh, how is AI going to change the world? And it's more of them saying, that's all well and good. That's interesting to me. But how do I, as we talked about for the last 30 minutes, how do I get better at manufacturing more efficiently? And if you can show me how AI does that with improving the reporting structure on my ERP system, then I'm excited about AI, right? So they're approaching it, as I would expect any good manufacturer to, in a very tactical, tell me how this makes a difference in my business kind of way.
Some incredible, incredible. Well, Kara, once again, it's been a pleasure. I love talking to you. You have just a in-depth knowledge of manufacturing, and I always love speaking to you. So this has been an amazing conversation. Thank you for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity. I can and do talking about manufacturing almost all day, every day. So it's a wonderful opportunity to be a part of it.
That's it for this episode of Let's Talk MedTech. Thanks again to our guest, Kara Walton, Director of Manufacturing Market Intelligence for Whipfully. And please visit us at mddionline.com for all your MedTech news. That's mddionline.com. And finally, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Let's Talk MedTech on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast.